Thank you all for coming out this evening. It's good to see everyone. And this is one of those where the topic was assigned. A lot of times whenever it's my turn to preach, that's the big one of the big challenges is what am I going to talk about. This evening that topic was assigned, and I'm thankful that you're here this evening to study it with me. I have a lot of material to cover. One of the things I've learned is that really there are a lot of opinions on this. But one thing that is, because people have talked to me since it's been announced that I was going to be talking on this topic, but one thing that seems to be fairly consistent among all those that have talked to me is we need a lesson on this. We need preaching on this. So I'm thankful that the elders recognize that and that they've asked me to do that. One of the things that one of the reasons perhaps that they asked me to do this is many of you know that I'm very much an avid Facebook user. I post many things there. I'm friends with many of you on Facebook, and it's something that I use, and I've used it effectively for a number of reasons, for a number of goals that I've been able to accomplish. And so it can be a useful tool. On the other hand, there are dangers that are involved, and I'll focus tonight on the dangers, and really the point will be, how do we avoid sin if indeed you're a Facebook user? That's going to be the focus of the lesson. But first, I wanted to give a little background that will talk to you a little bit about why this is needed and what is the history and why do we need something like this. But I'll go through this very, very quickly. What is social networking? It's really an online service that builds or reflects. And I'd say reflects is probably a better word. It reflects social relationships that already exist. It allows users to share ideas, to share events. So you can have a party or some other kind of event, announce it to your friends, share that. You can share your ideas. Media would include photographs, would include videos, activities, things you're interested in. You can share all these with other users very easily. And most services are going to link people together based on common interests. And maybe they might group people together based on geography. Where do you live? And those kinds of things. Or activities that you have in common. And really, one thing that many of them have in common is a recommendation system that's based on trust. And what that means is you have friends. You have people that you'd like to share this information with. And it recommends people that you may not have a connection to on the service, but that you may have a connection to in real life, if you will. And it's based on trust. So, in essence, these real-life connections that I have, real-life friendships, people that I'd like to share ideas with, people that I'd like to share photographs with, those people, a social networking service is an effort to digitize that so that I can do so from my computer as well as while I'm out and about talking to people face-to-face with people. It's an effort to digitize these real-life connections is in essence what it is. I want to do a quick history just so you can see that really what we're dealing with in Facebook is not new at all. Bulletin board systems way back in the day when you had to dial in, and they're called bulletin boards because you could post, and that would just be text. And again, the effort there was to bring people together for social purposes. Bulletin board systems typically were geographically limited because you had to dial in, and there would be long distance fees associated with dialing to some remote place. Then the internet came along, and you had Usenet or listserv. If you don't know what those are, networks where that you can post text, basically. They're still around. Listserv is like an email list. We use that for the Eastsiders. Listserv would be the precursor to that, where lots of people, you send a message to an address, and it emails a lot of people. That's basically what listserv is. So you can see how it's evolved over time. Then you'll remember back in the day when everybody got these CDs that they used for coasters with AOL and Prodigy and CompuNet, or CompuServe, I mean. And the deal there was the people who were subscribers of those services were collected together for typically social purposes. But then people wanted the entire internet. They didn't want just to be collected with people in those services. So you had web communities. You may remember the tripod pages or the GeoCities pages, where people would post a web page Now, kind of the thing there is that you had to know a little bit about how to write a web page for that to be useful to you. So people wanted something simpler. And then blogging came along. And what a blogging service is, very easy way to create your own web page, where really you supply the content and it's there on the web page. And anyone on the World Wide Web can view that. Then we had things like MySpace and LinkedIn. MySpace is really the, if you will, the precursor to Facebook. And we'll focus mainly on Facebook this evening. And then LinkedIn is more of a business-related social networking site. And then Facebook, we all know. And then probably the most recent in this timeline, you can view this slide as more of a timeline. The most recent is Twitter, which is the most recent one to have any following at all. So let's look at some of the more popular services and talk about them for just a few minutes. So the most popular services in terms of blogging, you've got Blogger and WordPress. These are allow users to do, if you wonder where the word blogging comes from, it's a weblog. So it just got shortened to blog. And it is a place where someone can post oftentimes original content or links to other sites. And typically these sites are the owner of that site generates all the content, but they'll have connections to maybe other bloggers. And usually these are very public, and you want to get the word out on these to anyone on the internet to come and view your blog. Journalists use this. Freelance writers use this. I even maintain my own blog about running. So anyone can blog, and it's actually a useful thing, and in some cases a kind of a fun thing to do, a way to share things. But it's usually, a blog is usually focused on a single interest. So when people come to your blog, they're looking for a specific type of content. And then another service is LinkedIn, I mentioned earlier, and that's focused on business connections and contacts. So it's similar to Facebook, but think of it as Facebook for the business world, where that you can post your resume, your career accomplishments, you can create connections to other users, make recommendations about other people that you may have worked with in the past. And then MySpace is still around, but it's older than Facebook, been around a little longer, but it shares many of the same features. MySpace may cater more to people who are particularly interested in music. You can see the logos there. They're kind of going through some changes to get back some of the user base that they may have lost to Facebook, but they're declining in popularity, but it's very similar to Facebook. And then Twitter, again, is the most recent, maybe one of the most recent kind of hot thing, if you will. And it's microblogging. You get 140 characters. Where did that come from? The idea is that you can text an update. Send in a text update and voila, you've got a quick, short, concise update. It's very often used by celebrities and journalists, people who might have a big following. But really, anybody in the world can create a Twitter account and get followers and post what you're doing. And then there are a number of others out there just that you can think about and look at. So Facebook is what we'll focus on this evening. And it is based on creating friend relationships. So you have friends in real life. You'll make friends with those people on Facebook and share your content with them. You can share quick public thoughts with something called a status update. That status update is typically very publicly available, and then other friends can look at that and make a comment about it. You can publicly talk to a friend on Facebook by posting something on their wall. That would be akin to shouting out something to them across the room. When you post on someone's wall, anyone can read what you've posted. So it's kind of that type of communication. And you can comment on photos, on videos, all of those things. And it allows a very quick sharing of events, media, notes, private messages. There are private messages on Facebook where that I don't have to shout across the room. I can send a private message to another of my friends, and that's very much like email. You send that message expecting that no one else will read it, and that's certainly there. And then there's a chat feature. If someone is online at the same time as you are, you can instantly message one another back and forth in short conversations. And that's Facebook. That's what's included in Facebook. And that's where we'll focus on the dangers of that particular service this evening. Why? Because Facebook is ubiquitous. Over 500 million active users. Now think about that for a minute. There are 300 million people in the United States. So really, 150 million active users in the United States. So if you think of 300 million users, that's basically one out of every two folks. I mean, that's of our entire population. So when you narrow that down to the people who would be old enough to have a Facebook account, basically everybody's got one. I imagine if I asked for, who all here has a Facebook account, I'd probably get around 80% of the folks here to raise their hand. I'm not sure about that. But it is ubiquitous. Everyone, it's nearly as ubiquitous as email. It's there. And that's why it's needed that we talk about it, because there are dangers with this, as well as opportunities to do good, that we need to be aware of. The average user has 130 friends. Some have many more, some have many fewer. People use Facebook over 700 billion minutes per month. Jeff Archer preached a sermon on this not too long ago, and so I'm going to borrow from his math. I didn't check it, but he said that that means that the average Facebook user is on Facebook for about 45 minutes a day, based on 700 billion minutes per month of use. Obviously, some are on for a lot longer, and some are on for a lot less. So that's a lot of time is being spent on Facebook. There are over 200 million mobile users. In fact, the joke was made, I need to turn off my phone because it would be embarrassing to get a Facebook notification while I were standing up here preaching this evening. And mobile users obviously are more active because you do get texts right there on your phone. I would say that probably half of the Facebook users here also use it on their mobile device. Over 2 million websites integrate with Facebook. So that lets you know that the rest of the world understands how important Facebook is to the Internet. And in March of 2010, Facebook actually surpassed Google as the most visited site on the Internet. Now, Google and Facebook go back and forth from month to month now, but that lets you know how much Internet traffic actually goes through Facebook. And people click from there to go to other sites. So it is that's why we need a lesson on this. It is everywhere. It is everywhere. Very commonly used. Some statistics. This is one of those odd things on online where there are actually more women who use it than men. Typically, online things, computer technology has been very much male dominated, but Facebook is an exception. The social networking, women tend to like that more than pretty much any other thing that's been online. So over half, about 56%, are female. And then the age distribution, over half are between the ages of 18 and 34. And I bring that up because the question was, I was asked to preach this sermon, and then it was asked, well, can you do it before the college students go back home? I wasn't really thinking that it was that prevalent. I mean, I knew that pretty much everybody in college had a Facebook account, but I also thought that maybe it was that the demographic of Facebook had shifted more to the, to the 30s and 40s age group. But it turns out that really over half or right at half are college age, so it's still very important to that age group. So one of the questions I got is, are you going to tell people not to have a Facebook account? Is Facebook good or bad? It's neither. I have a Facebook account. I don't encourage you to get one unless you have use for one. If you have no use for one, don't bother. If you need one and have a use for one and can do something with it, want to connect with people using that tool, go ahead. It can help accomplish good things, but it presents many dangers. And notice I didn't say any new good things or any new dangers. There's no new sin that Facebook enables us to commit. I want you to understand that. As Ecclesiastes 1, verses 10 and 11, is there anything of which it may be said, 9 and 10, that which has been is what will be, and that which is done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything which it may be said, see, this is new, has already been done in ancient times before us? We do well to remember that. that I'm not talking, I mean, while Facebook, the idea may be new, it's not really anything new at all. The same old sins are out there. We're still dealing with pride. We're still dealing with the lust of the flesh. We're still dealing with the lust of the eye. That's what we're dealing with, those same basic things. It still starts with the heart in order to do what's right. That's where we are. So the good things about Facebook, it gives us an opportunity to shine our lights. 1 Peter 2, let's read that passage together and kind of keep this in mind as we go through our study this evening. 1 Peter chapter 2, and beginning in verse 9, Peter, after reminding them of the glories of that salvation and that Jesus is the chief cornerstone, he goes on in verse 9 and reminds us of our role here. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, His own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, who once were not a people, but now are the people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now you have obtained mercy. Beloved, I beg you, as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Facebook, just like any time we interact with the rest of the world, gives us an opportunity to shine our lights, to share spiritual thoughts, to send out prayer requests to others, to have Bible discussions that may be more public than those which we might have privately, and let others see things that we're talking about. Now, when that happens in public, you do need to be careful and understand that there are others who are reading that. But it's good for the world to see Christians sharing Bible thoughts. That's good for the world to see. I've seen it used to invite, and I've used it myself, to invite people to gospel meetings, to learn about the spread of the gospel across the country and in other parts of the world, to learn about that by my friends on Facebook who are involved in this work. It's useful for these things, and it allows us the opportunity to shine our lights. But in addition to those spiritual things that we can do, there are some very benign social benefits from Facebook. I'm able to communicate with people that I know that are far, far away, and it's very easy to do that. And connect with people that I haven't seen in a while and that I don't get to see regularly, and to connect with family members. There are some benign, if you will, neither good nor bad, just benefits of this tool. But I want us to focus in this evening on avoiding sin on Facebook. Yes, there's good we can do. There are even some benign activities that we can do. But I want us to focus on how do we avoid sin. And here's where the meat of the lesson really is this evening. It should come as no surprise, right? The key to avoiding sin on Facebook is to keep your heart. Is that not true everywhere? Keep your heart pure. It starts with your heart. Let's read Luke chapter 6. One of the things that I was talking about just this afternoon is that Facebook doesn't really, there's no magic sauce that I can give you. Do this and you won't commit sin on Facebook. I don't have anything like that. I don't have any real profound thought. It's just have a good heart. Keep your heart pure. Keep your relationship with God what it ought to be. And these things, by and large, will take care of themselves. Facebook doesn't make you good or bad. It might offer some special temptations, which we'll deal with. But Facebook is only really going to reveal the kind of person you really are, just like anything else. That's what Facebook will do. Look at Luke chapter 6, beginning in verse 43. For a good tree does not bear bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its fruit. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. Facebook is going to reveal your heart, and it's going to reveal it quickly because you're open for public display. If your heart is rotten, It's going to show up very, very quickly. Facebook doesn't make you good or bad. It reveals whether you are good or bad. Just like our checkbook does the same, does it not? Does our checkbook reveal our heart? Does our Facebook page will reveal our heart? Our career, our jobs, that reveals the kind of person we are. Our family reveals the kind of person we are. The things we interact with every day simply reveal the kind of person we are. Facebook is no exception. You want to avoid sin on Facebook? Keep your heart pure. If your heart is evil, it's going to show up. Keep obedience to God as your primary motivator, and you're likely not to have any problems with Facebook. That passage there in Proverbs is in a context of adultery, and we'll look at adultery specifically in just a couple minutes. But the idea is, keep the commandment as a light. Follow the commandments that you've been given. If your heart's not right, you're going to sin with or without the help of Facebook. Now, Facebook may reveal it to the world that you've sinned, but you're going to sin with or without the help of Facebook if your heart is not right. Out of your heart proceed the things that you say. One thing I'd like to comment on here as a way of specific warning, that's a general warning, but words have meaning. And in Facebook, you are using words. You're communicating to people. Facebook can supplement, but it cannot substitute for good old face-to-face interaction. That's a critical part of being human, is talking to people. And people, I think, sometimes try to substitute that, and they've lost that skill. But one thing that I think is maybe even more dangerous is that people try to have maybe an online self and then a real-life self. We don't get that luxury, right? You don't get to have, well, that's just, I said that, but I only said it on Facebook. No, the words you say on Facebook, they're still your words. You still said them. They still communicated an idea to whoever read those words. They're your words. That's what you said. You don't get this is who I am here, and this is who I am there. Duplicity will get you in trouble. No matter where you try to be one thing sometimes and something else at another time, no matter what those two times or places are, duplicity will catch you and get you in trouble. In 2 Corinthians 10, the charge to Paul was that, you know, when he's around, he's not really that much. But his letters, oh, they're bold. The letters he writes are bold and forceful. And Paul kind of addresses that in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10, and we'll look at verses 10 and 11. And Paul deals with this charge. And he says, here's the charge. For his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech contemptible. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when we are absent, such we will be also indeed when we are present. That is an appropriate exhortation to us. What you are in words and letter, what you are in words and Facebook, needs to be what you are indeed in, if I can use this term, in real life. You need to be consistent. Who I am on Facebook is who I am. Who you are in real life is who you are. And Facebook needs to portray that. You don't get to be two people. Facebook doesn't give you that. Some dangers, specific spiritual dangers. Facebook can make sins of the tongue very easy. That's why that warning was there. There can be a by this perceived privacy, a temptation for unchaste behavior. And Facebook, quite simply, can waste time. Another thing I want us to be considerate of, and specifically, is Facebook can harm our influence by the deeds of others. We'll look at that in just a moment. And then there are privacy concerns. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about that as well for physical dangers. Let's look at sins of the tongue. Remember, Facebook is communication. That's what it's communication. The warnings against the tongue, the whole chapter of James chapter 3 really applies. But let's look at just a few selected verses from James chapter 3. James chapter 3, verse 2, a very familiar verse. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. And we'll talk just a moment about boasting on Facebook. I think that's a problem that I've seen, boasting. But the warnings there, really, if you're scanning through James 3, that's a good thing. Because you need to keep that in mind, because Facebook, while it's not really your tongue, it's your words, and that's the idea. This warning is very appropriate to how you conduct yourself with any social network, with any words that you use. Facebook can really appeal to someone's pride, because you get to put things out there for everyone to see. And an example, a Bible example of this that came to mind is that of Ananias and Sapphira. They wanted people to really think they were generous, didn't they? And they had this conspiracy to suggest how generous they were. They had agreed with one another that they were going to sell and give the whole price, right? That's what they were going to say, but that wasn't really what they did. They held part of it back. Facebook can allow you to sin in a very similar way, where that you can put forth these great things that you did, and you can exaggerate them just a little bit, and maybe make yourself look a lot better, puff yourself up a little bit. And maybe it's something where you won't get caught. Ananias and Sapphira sure didn't expect to get caught. You can do that. And another thing that Facebook allows you to do is put posts out there that draw attention to yourself. Allows you, if you want to seek attention, Facebook is a fine venue to seek attention. You can really draw some attention to yourself with the things you say. And I've seen some things that really border on narcissism, how that people have put the things out there. The warnings there in Romans chapter 12 and verse 3, in Galatians 6 and verse 3, if a man, thinks he's something when he's nothing, in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 3, he deceives himself. We often think we think people really care a lot about what we have to say. We may feed ourselves with that idea that people really care a whole lot about what we're doing at any given moment. And we overinflate what we think of ourselves and what others think of us. And that's a real danger of puffing up our own pride with the things we say and do. And in Romans 12 and verse 3, you can read that, but the idea is that a man shouldn't think more of himself more highly than he ought, but he ought to think soberly, seriously about himself. Sins of the tongue that are also easy to commit. The cloak of a keyboard, that's kind of my own term, that cloak of the keyboard, where that really the thing you need to understand is what you type there oftentimes is public. It could be available for 500 million people. Is that what you intended? But you're sitting in your private room and there's no person there that you're actually interacting with. And you may lose sight of that and say things that you wouldn't otherwise say. Or you may comment on someone else's words. And you may get engaged in something that's profane. There may be some kind of risque, where there's some innuendo there, risque. It's really going towards impropriety. May not quite be there, but yeah. And people will read it and they'll understand the message. And they'll see you involved with it. You may have some inside joke and you may think no one else knows about it. And that inside joke may be a little improper. And you get involved in that. And you're thinking you've hidden things, or you're thinking that no one will know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to harm my influence. Let's read those passages cited there, because those are so key to behaving ourselves. Ephesians chapter 4. And look at verse 29. Very familiar warning. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Keep that in mind, imparting grace to the hearers. That's the idea of Colossians 4 and verse 6, which we have cited just below. Look over in chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for the saints. Those kinds of things, fornication, uncleanness, covetousness. It's not even fit to talk about. And it's not fit to talk about on Facebook for everybody to see you talking about it. It's not fit to talk about. Don't let it be named among you. No filthiness, no foolish talking, no coarse jesting. All these things are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. Be aware that people, that you have an opportunity to do damage as well as good. Another sin of the tongue is gossip and slander and angry words. And I've seen people, they'll say something on their status, and the next thing you know, you've got an argument there. An argument that's really aired for the world to see. And because you didn't think before you wrote something back to someone. Don't make something public that doesn't need to be public. Don't gossip about other people's. Don't post something publicly that may be a private thing. That no good is going to come from your repeating that. Bearing in mind that typically at a minimum you're repeating it to all of your friends, all 130 according to the statistics. But you may be repeating it to all 500 million users. You may be doing that. Why? Just be cautious of that and don't repeat things. Don't say hurtful things about other people. The passages in Proverbs talk about a whisperer or a backbiter or someone who's angry, separating the best of friends. Let me ask you, do you think that's ever happened? Do you think you've ever had two friends who were good, close friends, but because of a few nasty words on Facebook are no longer friends anymore? You think that's ever happened? They quit being Facebook friends, but then they quit being friends in real life as well. You think that's ever happened? I would assure you that it has. It's happened with just words, hasn't it? That's the way these things happen. One thing that I want to talk about here as well, Facebook posts can also lead to gossip in real life. And again, I hate using that distinct because of my effort has been there is no distinguishing thing, right? It's who you are. But I've heard these kinds of conversations. Did you see what she said on Facebook? Did you see that? Did you see that picture of her? Or did you see that picture of him on Facebook? Did you see that? And then the next thing you know, they're talking about, and there may be a context to that comment, or there may be a context to that photo that you don't know about. And the next thing you've done is you've gossiped. You've gossiped about it. And you've hurt people, and then you've jumped to conclusions, and the next thing you know is that you're mad at that person. That person has no idea why. Let me beg you of something. Beg you. If you see something on my Facebook page that you think is inappropriate, by all means, ask me about it. If you don't want to come and talk to me about it face to face because that may be intimidating, I understand that. Send me a Facebook message. I'll respond to that. I'll read that. And that may be easier. Do that. Please. If you see something, and treat others the same way. Don't call up your friend and say, did you see what Eric had on Facebook? Please don't do that. Don't do that to me, and don't do that to anyone else, brother or not. Don't do that. Please. Talk to people about the things you're concerned about. We're dealing with souls. We're dealing with people. It's very important. Facebook and adultery. This is an interesting statistic. The American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, this is according to an article on MSNBC, says that 81% of its members have used or faced evidence from a social network site in the last 5 years in a divorce court case. Wow. 81%. Of lawyers who specialize in divorce in court have used or have had used against their client evidence gained from Facebook. Do you think Facebook does not offer a special temptation for adultery? Oh, it absolutely does. Be aware of that. Be aware of that. Purity is the key, as I said earlier. If you have a pure heart and you hate adultery and you're doing everything to avoid adultery, your common sense is going to lead you away from things that are going to lead to adultery on Facebook. Certainly. But Satan will use this tool, and he will use it on even the most unsuspecting. Be aware of it. I have some specific warnings here on this that I'd like to share with you. One thing I'd like, let's read this passage because it is so important. And this is something that will help you to do what's right anywhere in life. Psalm 139. And let's read the first 12 verses. It's a lengthy reading, but it is so important. O Lord, You have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, You know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before. You laid Your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where can I go from Your Spirit? Or where can I flee from Your presence? If I ascend into heaven, You are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, You are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there Your hand shall lead me, and Your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from You, but the night shines as day, and the darkness and the light are both alike to You. That is a beautiful reminder that God is ever present with you. And the psalmist, as you continue reading the psalm, the psalmist wants God there. He's joyed by God's presence with him, by knowing God is there, God's hands upon him. Cultivate that attitude of knowing that God knows what you're doing at all times, and take joy in that. Take joy in knowing that God knows what you're doing. And if you have that attitude and that heart, you will flee from adultery. You will. Do that. And remember that God is there. God knows what you're up to. He knows that. Keep that in mind. Let's look at some specific things. One thing I just remind you, David is one of the most admired characters in all the Bible. If he could fall prey to adultery, so can you. There's this perceived privacy, especially with the chat feature in Facebook, where I can send a quick little message and get a quick little message back, and nobody sees it. And in fact, really, Facebook doesn't log those things that are said. I mean, it takes effort to log those things. So there is some level of privacy there in those. And that privacy can tempt you. But know that really there is no privacy. The Lord knows what you're saying. And beyond that, it can be logged. It can be. And if your spouse gets suspicious, don't be surprised if they log it. There are stories of that happening, and it can indeed happen. And, you know, just like anything else, the thrill of the forbidden, right? Doesn't that, it should not, it's evil, but doesn't that entice us? The thrill of what we're not supposed to do? That the thrill of a secret, I have a secret. That can be so powerfully tempting, and Satan knows that, and he will play on your mind with that. And Facebook is a tool he can use to accomplish that. And even if you engage in some kind of flirtatious chatting behavior, and it doesn't escalate to adulterous actions, know this. That thrill of the secret, that thrill of the unknown, that thrill of the forbidden, will sear your conscience, and your spouse will be able to detect it. And there'll be something between you, and it won't be like it was. Even if it doesn't escalate, it is dangerous. I quoted Proverbs 6 earlier. We didn't actually go and read there. But one of the statements there in that context of adultery, can you take fire to your bosom and not be burned? You cannot. You cannot. This is fire, and if you play with it, you will get burned. Do not be deceived. Your sin will find you out. You are very unlikely. This is assuming that it does escalate, that you toy with it and you don't respect the power of that draw, and you toy with it and it escalates. You're very unlikely to get away with it. Very unlikely. But if you do get away with it, that is the worst possible thing that could happen to you. Because it will destroy your soul and you won't want to come clean later. And your soul will be lost. That's the worst thing that could happen. So when you are tempted in this way, think about the best possible thing that can happen is that I devastate my spouse and my family. That's the best possible outcome for me. Avoid it. Run away. And I have a couple of specific things to talk to you about. Beware of friending old flames. Beware of that. Your high school buddies are going to see you on Facebook and they're going to send you a friend request. Beware of friending that old girlfriend or that old boyfriend. Beware of that. And then the next thing you know, you're chatting about, oh, what would have been if we hadn't broken up? And the next thing you know, you're saying bad things about your... Because after all, your spouse... I mean, you live with them every day. They can get to be kind of rotten from time to time. I know I can be. And the next thing you know, you're talking about... And you're fantasizing about how wonderful things would be if they were just different. It's dangerous. It's dangerous, and it will destroy you, your family, and your soul. Beware of friending old flames. What do you hope to accomplish with that? What do you hope to accomplish with an old boyfriend or old girlfriend? Give your spouse your Facebook password. Let them have it. Why would you hide that from them? Why? Lee has my account and my password, and I'll call her sometimes when I'm not available to check things, and I'll say, hey, can you log on and check so-and-so for me? Can you do that? Why? Because I have nothing to hide from her. And if you have something to hide, that is a red flag. Share that with your spouse. There's no reason not to. Share your password with your spouse. You follow those last couple of things. That I'm not saying that's the cure-all, but that will go a long way towards avoiding this very real, very serious danger. Finally, redeem the time. Even if your Facebook usage is benign, you can waste tons of time. Tons of time. The days are evil. Our time is limited. We have many things that we can be doing. Ephesians 5:16, Colossians 4:5 are famous, well-known passages that talk about redeeming the time. There's the Lord's work, whether it's a Bible study, whether it's serving some other brother in need or sister in need, whether it's preparing for a Bible class lesson. There's the Lord's work to do. There's housework. There's schoolwork, homework. There are work tasks that need to be done. And these need to be done first, before Facebook. Time on Facebook can become like an addiction. I'm not a professional, so I wouldn't say that it is an addiction, but I've seen behaviors that are very similar to someone who's addicted. It's almost like they just have to go there. And they almost can't help themselves from going and spending time on Facebook. Beware of that. It can be, don't be 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 12, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. I will not be brought under the power of any. Don't let it have power over you and dictate what you do. Use it as a tool. Don't let it use you. Protect your influence. This is a kind of a specific thing. You'll almost definitely friend worldly people. You have friends in the world. You're going to interact with people of the world. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you do in real life friend, and since it's just an effort to digitize the real life, you're going to have friends with worldly people. And these people may post things on your wall, on your Facebook page, that are completely inappropriate. And if so, you are responsible, you are able to delete these posts, and you're responsible to do that. And unfriending, if someone continues to do that, remove them from your friend list. And they won't have the ability to do that anymore. And unfriending someone is typically a, a fairly non-confrontational thing to do. It's not like they get an email that says, they just deleted you from your friend list. It doesn't work that way. I mean, a lot of times you can unfriend someone, they'll never even notice. I mean, I have some 500 friends, and if I lost half of them, I'd probably not notice. I wouldn't even notice. It just because I don't interact with them that regularly. So you have control over that. Recall 1 Peter chapter 2 that we read earlier. You are to shine as lights. You are to have your conduct honorable. People are looking at your page. And be aware that someone else might put something there. Real quick on some warnings. As a Facebook user, you are responsible to understand what's public, what's available to all your friends, what's available maybe to all Facebook users, what may be available to the entire internet. There are things on Facebook that are available that way. And what's private, what's between you and someone else, what's between you and some group, what's between you and all your friends. You need to understand that. And if you're going to be a user, that's your responsibility. I mean, I don't have the time this evening to kind of walk you through that. But there are settings, and it's fairly easily explained. And you're responsible to look through that and understand what you say and how it gets distributed. You need to be careful of what you post publicly. And I'm talking, we've already covered this in terms of hurtful things, but I'm talking about, like Harold said to me this morning after services, why don't you post to everyone that you're going to be in Arizona for the next 3 weeks, right? That's about the same as not going and getting your paper and having the paper boy just have them pile up. It advertises to every thief and con artist that you're away. Young people especially be aware of that, making it publicly known that your parents aren't home or something silly like that. Be aware of that. There are dangers. And, you know, I used to be one of those who said, I'm not worried about privacy. I got nothing to hide. Well, that's true among my friends generally, but I don't want the con artists or the thieves knowing when I'm not going to be home. I don't want that to be known. I mean, there is benefits. There are benefits to privacy. So be aware of that. Become familiar with Facebook's privacy settings. People do monitor Facebook with less than good intentions. One other thing, potential employers, if you're up for a job, you can count on they're going to check out who you are before they hire you. And they're going to run into a friend and they're going to try to get a look at your Facebook page. They're going to Google you first. But then they're going to try to see your Facebook page. So be aware that what you say on Facebook, don't say anything on Facebook that you wouldn't say. What you post may be available to 500 million users. You know, your comments on other people's statuses are public, probably even for their friends who may not be your friends. Don't say anything publicly that you wouldn't say to a public audience with the understanding that it's being recorded for playback over and over and over and over again. If you wouldn't say it in that context, then don't say it publicly on Facebook because that's exactly what's happening. It's getting stated publicly. Not only your friends now, but the friends you add later are going to be able to see that. Friends of friends may be able to see that. And then it's going to be there for indefinitely. It's recorded for people to come back and look at. Keep that in mind. Facebook doesn't introduce any new sins. We've covered that. Like anything else, it can be used for good and bad. It'll just reveal the kind of person you are in your heart. The key to avoiding sin on Facebook is purity of heart. But beware of the specific dangers of evil communications, lasciviousness, wasting time. Beware of those. And then the physical dangers of privacy. Appreciate your attention as I went a little over. There was so much to cover. Are you here this evening and perhaps you have committed some sin in a public way? Maybe Facebook was the tool you used to commit that sin. Maybe not. But if you have a sin you need to confess publicly, we'd certainly like to help you this evening. Perhaps you're here and you haven't obeyed the gospel. You have an opportunity now to do what's right. We'd happily rejoice with you as you made that confession that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. We'd be happy to baptize you into Christ for the remission of your sins. Are you here this evening and that's your need? If we're able to help you, please let us know by coming forward while we stand and sing.